File 53. In every case where there are exigencies or tasks that seem impossible to deal with successfully, public opinion must be concentrated on the one problem, under the conviction that the solution of this problem alone is a matter of life or death. Only in this way can public interest be aroused to such a pitch as will urge people to combine in a great voluntary effort and achieve important results. This fundamental truth applies also to the individual, provided he is desirous of attaining some great end. He must always concentrate his efforts to one definitely limited stage of his progress, which has to be completed before the next step be attempted. Those who do not endeavor to realize their aims step by step, and who do not concentrate their energy in reaching the individual stages, will never attain the final objective. At some stage or other, they will falter and fail. This systematic way of approaching an objective is an art in itself, and always calls for the expenditure of every ounce of energy in order to conquer step after step of the road. Therefore, the most essential preliminary condition necessary for an attack on such a difficult stage of the human road is that the authorities should succeed in convincing the masses that the immediate objective which is now being fought for is the only one that deserves to be considered and the only one on which everything depends. The broad masses are never able clearly to see the whole stretch of the road lying in front of them without becoming tired and thus losing faith in their ability to complete the task. To a certain extent, they will keep the objective in mind, but they are only able to survey the whole road in small stages, as in the case of the traveller who knows where his journey is going to end, but who masters the endless stretch far better by attacking it in degrees. Only this way can he keep up his determination to reach the final objective. It is in this way, with the assistance of every form of propaganda, that the problem of fighting venereal disease should be placed before the public, not as a task for the nation, but as the main task. Every possible means should be employed to bring the truth about this scourge home to the minds of the people, until the whole nation has been convinced that everything depends on the solution of this problem. That is to say, a healthy future or national decay. Only after such preparatory measures, if necessary spread over a period of many years, will public attention and public resolution be fully aroused, and only then can serious and definite measures be undertaken without running the risk of not being fully understood, or of being suddenly faced with a slackening of the public will. It must be made clear to all that a serious fight against this scourge calls for vast sacrifices and an enormous amount of work. To wage war against syphilis means fighting against prostitution, against prejudice, against old established customs, against current fashion, public opinion, and last but not least, against false prudery in certain circles. The first preliminary condition to be fulfilled before the state can claim a moral right to fight against all these things is that the young generation should be afforded facilities for contracting early marriages. Late marriages have the sanction of a custom which, from whatever angle we view it, is and will remain a disgrace to humanity. Prostitution is a disgrace to humanity and cannot be removed simply by charitable or academic methods. Its restriction and final extermination presupposes the removal of a whole series of contributory circumstances. The first remedy must always be to establish such conditions as will make early marriages possible, especially for young men. For women are, after all, only passive subjects in this matter. An illustration of the extent to which people have so often been led astray nowadays is afforded by the fact that not infrequently one hears mothers in so-called better circles openly expressing their satisfaction at having found as a husband for their daughter a man who has already sown his wild oats, etc. As there is usually so little shortage in men of this type, the poor girl finds no difficulty in getting a mate of this description, and the children of this marriage are a visible result of such supposedly sensible unions. When one realizes, apart from this, that every possible effort is being made to hinder the process of procreation, and that nature is being willfully cheated of her rights, there remains really only one question. Why is such an institution as marriage still in existence? And what are its functions? Is it really nothing better than prostitution? Does our duty to posterity no longer play any part? Or do people not realize the nature of the curse they are inflicting upon themselves and their offspring by such criminally foolish neglect of one of the primary laws of nature? This is how civilized nations degenerate and gradually perish. Marriage is not an end in itself, but must serve the greater end, which is that of increasing and maintaining the human species and the race. This is its only meaning and purpose. This being admitted, then it is clear that the institution of marriage must be judged by the manner in which its allotted function is fulfilled. Therefore, early marriages should be the rule, because thus the young couple will still have that pristine force which is the fountainhead of a healthy prosperity with unimpaired powers of resistance. Of course, early marriages cannot be made the rule unless a whole series of social measures are first undertaken, without which early marriages cannot be even thought of. In other words, a solution of this question, which seems a small problem in itself, cannot be brought about without adopting radical measures to alter the social background. The importance of such measures ought to be studied and properly estimated, especially at a time when the so-called social republic has shown itself unable to solve the housing problem, and thus has made it impossible for innumerable couples to get married. That sort of policy prepares the way for the further advance of prostitution. Another reason why early marriages are impossible is our nonsensical method of regulating the scale of salaries, which pays far too little attention to the problem of family support. Prostitution, therefore, can only be really seriously tackled if, by means of a radical social reform, early marriage is made easier than hitherto. This is the first preliminary necessity for the solution of this problem. Secondly, a whole series of false notions must be eradicated from our system of bringing up and educating children, things which hitherto no one seems to have worried about. In our present educational system, a balance will have to be established first and foremost between mental instruction and physical training. What is known as gymnasium, grammar school, today, is a positive insult to the Greek institution. Our system of education entirely loses sight of the fact that in the long run, a healthy mind can exist only in a healthy body. This statement, with few exceptions, applies particularly to the broad masses of the nation. In the pre-war Germany, there was a time when no one took the trouble to think over this truth. Training of the body was criminally neglected, the one-sided training of the mind being regarded as sufficient guarantee for the nation's greatness. This mistake was destined to show its effects sooner than had been anticipated. It is not pure chance that the Bolshevik teaching flourishes in those regions whose degenerate population has been brought to the verge of starvation, as, for example, in the case of Central Germany, Saxony, and the Ruhr Valley. In all these districts, there is a marked absence of any serious resistance, even by the so-called intellectual classes, against this Jewish contagion. And the simple reason is that the intellectual classes are themselves physically degenerate, not through privation, but through education. The exclusive intellectualism of the education in vogue among our upper classes makes them unfit for life's struggle at an epoch in which physical force and not mind is the dominating factor. Thus, they are neither capable of maintaining themselves nor of making their way in life. In nearly every case, physical disability is the forerunner of personal cowardice. The extravagant emphasis laid on purely intellectual education and the consequent neglect of physical training must necessarily lead to sexual thoughts in early youth. Those boys whose constitutions have been trained and hardened by sports and gymnastics are less prone to sexual indulgence than those stay-at-homes who have been fed exclusively with mental pabulum. Sound methods of education cannot, however, afford to disregard this, and we must not forget that the expectations of a healthy young man from a woman will differ from those of a weakling who has been prematurely corrupted. Thus, in every branch of our education, the day's curriculum must be arranged so as to occupy a boy's free time in profitable development of his physical powers. He has no right in those years to loaf about, becoming a nuisance in public streets and in cinemas. But when his day's work is done, he ought to harden his young body so that his strength may not be found wanting when the occasion arises. To prepare for this and to carry it out should be the function of our educational system, and not exclusively to pump in knowledge or wisdom. Our school system must also rid itself of the notion that the training of the body is a task that should be left to the individual himself. There is no such thing as allowing freedom of choice to sin against posterity, and thus against the race.